Welcome to Cardiovascular Matters. Whether you are looking for answers for yourself or someone you love, we are here to give you the best information available. Each week, the founder of Cardiovascular Institute of the South, Dr. Craig Walker, and medical device sales veteran, Terry Roberts, discuss the causes, symptoms, treatment, and prevention of health-related issues stemming from cardiovascular disease. Now here's your hosts, Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts.
Hey, welcome back to Cardiovascular Matters. You know, the premise of this podcast was started based on, you know, my observation of patients that would go see their doctor, and then everything's coming at them so fast, and a lot of big words and, scientific jargon, and maybe didn't understand exactly what the physician was saying, or maybe could not remember, didn't hear what was being said. So welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Walker, as he's our expert and has been a great friend of mine and a customer of mine back in the day when I was working for the big medical device companies. So anyway, thanks for coming back, and be sure and like and follow us. We're available on all the platforms, but be sure and like and follow us. That helps our algorithm and helps us grow, and pass this along to your friends. Thank you very much. Enjoy the show. So good afternoon, Dr. Walker. This is number 3 in our podcast series, and today we're going to be talking about how you got started on the venous side of the vasculature after years of working in heart disease and peripheral vascular disease.
Sure, Terry. You know, obviously, I started off as one of the very first angioplasty fellows in America. When angioplasty first came to America, and that was mostly just in the heart. But to get to the heart, I had to go through legs or arms or other things to actually reach the heart in order to be able to open up vessels. And often, I encountered blocked vessels. And these blocked vessels could serve as an impediment to be able to treat the patient effectively. It would perhaps stop us from getting there, or if we needed support things, such as a balloon pump at that time, we couldn't use those if there was tremendous blockage, unless we could open that. So that piqued my interest, but it made me realize how little I knew about the whole peripheral space, both arteries and veins. And it's an important thing to know about, because peripheral artery disease is often the only clue that someone may have heart artery disease. They go together. They're typically caused by atherosclerosis. And often if we find a diminished pulse in a foot, what we find is a sick patient, and that patient's at higher risk of heart attack or stroke. In fact, a new diagnosis of having peripheral artery disease, or disease of the arteries of your legs, portends a higher likelihood of dying of a heart attack than a heart attack survivor. And that's with no heart symptoms at all. So to start with, it may be an early clue before a fatal problem happens. But it's so much more than that, because we have to get to the heart. Well, as I started treating these patients with leg problems, and I realized I could use many of the techniques I used in the heart to open up these blocked arteries, then more and more patients were coming to me who were in danger of having their legs cut off because of gangrene, or because they simply were not getting enough arterial blood to the tissues. So I started working on these patients and had very high rates of success in avoiding amputations. But whenever some patients came and they already had ulcers, or some would need a minor amputation, for instance, a toe might be gangrenous and they would have to take the toe off once I'd gotten blood supply to the foot, I started going into the wound healing centers to see how these patients were doing. And while in the wound healing centers, it became obvious to me that overwhelmingly, the leading problem being treated in these wound centers were venous ulcers, not arterial flow. Not decubitus ulcers, although that's a problem, but venous ulcers. Venous ulcers are incredibly common, and they last so long. It is not uncommon to see a patient who's had venous ulcers being treated for 30 years without relief. And I can tell stories of wives who've told me they've had to change bed sheets as much as 3 times every night with venous ulcers, because these venous ulcers, which weep fluid, or leaking into the bed and wetting the bed. And these patients are having to drink protein shakes to keep their protein up. And, you know, in looking at this and realizing that we have better treatment than just simply wound care for that, really got me interested in this. Could we change the course of therapy with venous ulcers? Now, along came papers, mainly from Dr. Raju working in Jackson, Mississippi. He was a cardiothoracic and vascular surgeon who became one of the world's vein experts. In fact, many would say the world's venous expert. And he started doing procedures of venous stenting for compressed veins in the abdomen. And he had tremendous success with healing venous ulcers. And this has evolved as better stents have been created, and we're starting to understand when and how to look for this problem. Because this was really unknown of a really short time ago, and certainly we had no therapies for iliac vein compression. Well, Dr. Raju showed pretty dramatic improvement when he could go in and balloon the areas of iliac veins when they were compressed in the abdomen, place a stent, and would have healing of these ulcers. Now, it is very difficult to see the veins in the abdomen, particularly if you're a little bit overweight. But even in thin people, it is difficult to see those. But you have to have a high index of suspicion. Certainly, whenever we see that someone has a long-standing venous ulcer, our first thought should be, is there iliac vein compression? There may be other clues. One side of the leg, one leg swells up much worse than the other leg. That could be a clue of it. Recurrent clots that occur in a given leg could be another clue. But if indeed we suspect this, then what we can do is a fairly minimally invasive study where we actually access a vein, we cross the iliac vein, which is in the abdomen, and we use an intravascular ultrasound. And what we're looking for is a vein which should be well open and round that is compressed. And what compresses the vein is as the aorta divides to go to each leg, the arterial flow is the aorta, we have the iliac arteries. And the right iliac artery must first cross the left iliac vein and then the right iliac vein. And then in so doing, it can trap the vein between it, which has high pressure, and the backbone, which is of course rigid, and it can cause narrowing, and that can cause symptoms, and certainly can make that vessel clot off. But even if it doesn't clot, it raises the venous pressures chronically, and it predisposes people to developing ulceration. So all of us know about decubitus ulcers, ulcers on the backside in patients who lay in bed and can't move. That's because the skin is pressing against the bed and the tissue starts to die. That's a decubitus ulcer. A venous ulcer is from pressure within. The high pressure inside the vein presses out against the skin and causes an ulceration to form. And since there's high pressure, once the ulcer forms, these tend to leak. These ulcers tend to occur right at the ankle, right above the ankle. They're typically associated with discolored skin. And yet, even in today's world, these are usually misdiagnosed and absolutely are undertreated. I can cite many examples of patients who I was able to see once I understood this problem, who I was able to do a 20-minute vein stent procedure whose ulcers were completely cured within 6 to 8 weeks after having fought venous ulcers for 20 plus years. I mean, this is transformative therapy and something we can't ignore.
These patients that are the, is it just a familial thing or an anatomical thing that leads them there, or overweight, or is it?
That's a great question, Terry. There is clear familial higher incidence for sure. That's no two ways about it. This occurs in families, and if we see a family that's had this, many of these patients are predisposed to having pulmonary emboli and sudden death because when that vein gets compressed, flow slows down, and clot may occur, and that clot can then be transmitted, go out to the lungs, stop us from oxygenating ourselves, and you can have sudden death. That is the second leading cause of sudden death, is a blood clot thrown to the lungs or a pulmonary embolus. But it's more than that. This stops drainage of our internal organs. Many people feel pelvic congestion. Many women have much heavier cycles. Hemorrhoids may often be caused by iliac compression and the higher pressures exerted on the hemorrhoidal veins. There are a whole series of things that occur with this, yet this has not historically been front and center of medicine. This is something which has been poorly understood, poorly treated, and only recently is evolving. Now, when Raju started iliac vein stent procedures, there really were very, very few stents he could use, and even less high-pressure balloons or other things which we sometimes need to treat. As is usually the case in medicine, once we learned about the problem, new tools have been created. We have better balloons. We have better stents, stents that are longer, stents that have better radial force, stents that are less likely to move, stents that we can place more accurately. And so the treatment of this has evolved into a much safer and more effective measure than it was in even Dr. Raju's initial publications.
That's outstanding. So with these new technologies, you're able to bring a patient in after you've worked them up, obviously, and then that stenting procedure itself would be like a, maybe not even involve an overnight stay. Would that be an outpatient procedure?
In fact, it does not require an overnight stay. In fact, typically just a few hours and the patient can go, because you're only accessing a vein which is much less likely to bleed because it's under much less pressures. But you know, Terry, I think the bigger issue here is who should be concerned about if they have iliac vein compression. I think that's a much easier answer for me to give. I think anyone who's had a venous ulcer should ask themselves or ask their doctors, is there a chance I have iliac vein compression? Now, not all venous ulcers are caused by iliac vein compression. Just superficial veins can cause that problem. Old clots in the deep veins can cause that problem. But it has been my experience that people with very long-standing venous ulcers, those that last, you know, many months, a huge percentage, certainly more than 80% of those, turn out to have some element of iliac vein compression or a web or some other iliac compression. The other group that I would suggest should always be very concerned are those people who can look at their lower legs. And when you look below the knee, you see reddened skin that's a completely different color than the rest of the leg. Many people think, well, I wear shorts and that's just, you know, where the sun gets to me. But if the lower leg is discolored, if it's brown, if it's got this different color, that suggests that blood is stagnant in that part of the body, and some of the white blood cells in the blood are eating some of the red blood cells, which have iron in them, and they're depositing that iron. And so it gives it that kind of rust color, if you would, of the lower legs. When one sees that, one should be concerned. And unfortunately, there is no one non-invasive test that's perfect for diagnosing iliac vein compression. When I say a diagnostic test, in venous disease, our go-to tool is use of an ultrasound outside the body, a diagnostic ultrasound. Now, that can give us clues of iliac vein compression. If we see common femoral vein, that's a vein that's right at the groin crease. If we see that that vein, that blood is moving in the wrong direction, not going back to the heart, but moving down, and if that does not change with respirations, then that's a clue that there might be something going on up above. In thin people, sometimes we can actually see the iliac veins, and we can see it with duplex scanning. But really, the test of choice, and many people talk about CTAs telling it or MR studies telling it, but I think the test of choice for determining if you have iliac vein compression, if you've had ulcers, is actually invasive. It's using the intravascular ultrasound. You can do that with no contrast whatsoever. The risk is minimal. And you're looking for compression. It just is using an ultrasound just like you would use on a depth finder on a boat. It gives you the image going around it. And if you see compression, if you see the vein being squeezed, that is how we make the diagnosis. And really, until one has that, you cannot 100% be sure that one does not have it. And certainly, if you have a strong family history of ulcerations, or if you have had recurrent clots in legs, you should absolutely want to make sure that this is not a problem that you're facing.
Is it common practice, let's say you're doing that study and you place the ultrasound catheter in the vein and you see the obstruction, is it based on the algorithm or the protocol, would you then in turn fix it in the same setting, or since you're already there?
I would. In fact, before I plan to interrogate this, I tell a patient, we may not find this, but if we do, then, you know, I would want to fix it then rather than do a second procedure. It's less expensive to do it that way. It's more efficacious. And as I've said, this is a pretty safe procedure when it is done, when done correctly. It is actually quite safe procedure. So no reason to repeat that. Now, that being said, there are some people that I bring in and I do intravascular ultrasound and it is negative. On each of these patients, I show them the ultrasound pictures after, and I show exactly what we're doing. And if I don't have to treat it, I show them that as well. If we have some of these symptoms, and if indeed we see no evidence of iliac vein compression, then we know the symptoms are coming from the superficial veins lower down. Mm-hmm. And then we can address that subsequently.
Perfect. Well, I think this was a very good dive into this topic. Again, and I'll put it in the show notes, but if you would like to schedule time with Dr. Walker, www.cardio.com, you can pull up their website, and you'll be able to easily get in touch with him and his staff. I want to thank Dr. Walker for giving us this information, and we'll see you next week on Cardiovascular Matters.
Thanks for listening, and please subscribe, like, and share this podcast with your friends and family. Join us next week for new topics and answers with Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts on Cardiovascular Matters.